accession number 14788, reel 14.
Mr. Parker, reel 14. Now, you're talking about how when you'd escaped from the quarry in Germany, you'd bumped into an Italian-American who was obviously with some sort of commando-style unit.
Yeah, yeah.
What happened next, then? And what month was this, by the way, would you say?
I think, where are we? It'd be March 45. And this Yankee on the outpost, he said, well, if you go about 2 miles down this road, or 4 miles, he said, you should meet the HQ. Ask for the Provost Marshal. Well, that's the military policeman to us, you know. And they put us up in there, and they'd confiscated a few houses, and they put us up in a proper German house. The first night, I always remember I slept under a cuckoo clock, and this bloody cuckoo clock was going all night, cuckoo, cuckoo. And I was on the sofa downstairs. They got all the beds upstairs, and we obviously they fed us and gave us, as they call the old chocolate and candy, and we had that much chocolate and candy, they call it. We were sick after about 2 days, and again, it was plenty of beer. And so I said, well, what we really want to do is want to get out of here, we want to get back home, because we said we'd been away for 5 years and we've not seen, you know, ground and leaves and like other people. So I said, well, we'll give you a truck, and can you drive? I said, yeah. He said, we'll give you a map and you can make it so. He said, if you go down this road, he said, this field's full of gasoline, as they call it. He said, and you can help yourself. And then we started coming back. And I got a train, one place, and there was all kinds of people coming back. There was Italians, there was Dutch, there was three French. Everything on the train coming back home, or getting away from the war zone. We came back through, these are German names, Weimar, Gotha. Erfurt. Eisenach. Eisenach and Fulda.
And what reception were you getting from everybody, both the Americans around and the German civilians?
Well, it's so confused that it was like an anticlimax, really. I mean, you think, well, should we get nearer home? And, but you never knew until you actually got home that you was getting home. You know, so it's rather queer reception. I mean, it didn't spit at us like it did in Italy. I mean, they were convinced that the war was over, so they were quite content to let it go by.
So what happened next, then?
Well, the biggest thing I found interest me was we crossed the Rhine, and obviously, there was no sort of bridge, because all the bridges had been knocked out, and we came across one of them Bailey-type bridges, and I was seasick, because the Rhine's a big place. I mean, have you ever been across the Rhine? Anywhere near? It's big, isn't it? Hey! And it was sort of moonlight. Well, imagine that on the water.
It's
sort of.
It's a pontoon bridge.
Yeah, pontoon, that's it, yeah, pontoon. And we crossed at Frankfurt on Main. That was Frankfurt on one side, and you come onto Main on the other side. So that was the crossing on the Rhine. I thought we were on the sea for a time, because we seemed to be going forever. And they worked out that In the army of sort of, it was the third army of the Yankees, and they come up from they'd been right in the south of France, the Yankees, with Patton's crowd, and there was a third army, and they'd come up, and their HQ was in France, and our HQ was in Belgium. So Mainz, of course, is in France, so they said, well, it's no good stopping here, I mean, you'll have to find your way to your own HQ. So again, you take a train or whatever. So we got a train into Luxembourg. And when we got into Luxembourg, I mean, the Yankees were in charge of Luxembourg themselves. And did you know the old Luxembourg radio station, pre-war? Well, they took us in there, and the Yankees were in charge, and they were sending all messages in over to Germany and Russia. And they said, well, we'd like you to stop here and help us with broadcasting.
So, in what way?
Well, given your experience of the Germans and you've been prisoners of the Italians, and say, you know, what you think about them, sort of more or less propaganda purposes.
What did you think of that?
Well, again, same as say, we've only been away 5 years and you're not seeing your pals, or you. I mean, I'd got a father and no mother. I got a brother there at home. And 5 years a long time, so we were keen to get home.
So you refused?
Yeah.
And where next from Luxembourg?
Well, they treated us pretty well. They said, we'll give you a billet for the night, and this is Hotel, whatever it's, I think it's Hotel Royal. And they gave us bed and breakfast for the night, and then they gave us a railway ticket to go through to Belgium. And from there we went into Belgium, and that was our HQ then. And we went to, it was a big, what would we call it? They were like William Parker's, like a hall kind of thing. And by that time, I was still a missing person to everybody else, because no one knew who we were. We were just floating around Europe. So even my dad couldn't write to me, or, you know. And the Montgomery Club we went to, that was it. Montgomery Club in Brussels. And this was a real posh place, and you introduced to certain blokes. We didn't know who was there, so what regiment are you? By that time, you could afford to say you was in the South Officers' Arms, or RHA. And I said, well, we better get back into the army again then. So at the moment, I said, you're just on the missing persons list. You imagine Europe, all the people have been sent over as forced labour and prisoners of war, and the Germans, Italians, Haitians, Serbs, Russians, Mongolians, all running about spare. And a bloke took us in and gave us a £5 note, we signed a bit of chicken, said, all right, you're a British soldier then now. That was it. I was in the army again. So after 3.5 years prisoner of war, I was back in the army. Gave a new number, and that was it.
What happened then?
Well, again, they gave us a couple of days sort of briefing and washing up and getting, sort of organised, and they said, well, as soon as we get organised, we'll fly you out.
Back to England?
Yeah.
So there's no question of being sent back on active service?
Oh, no. And they went with the Lancaster Bombers, took us out. And there was 35 men and the ordinary crew. That was sort of the weight of a bomber loaded. So the bloke who was driving it could sort of see he got the right sort of volume on board. And I looked out the window and I said to one of those, because don't forget, we weren't in our own regiment then. We're all hodges and sods. I said, we shot him along before we went in the bus. Look out the back, look out the window. And we looked out, and there's plays on the bloody on the nose end, tipped over, because with the weight adjustment, they couldn't get them right all the time. Imagine that with a bomb static in it. Just plug it in. That's weight. But with blokes moving about, and you're supposed to sort of stay in your seat all the time, like me and you. You get a bloke there, that's the way it's differential. Eventually we took off and we landed at Horsham in Sussex. That was a Yankee, it was an RAF place. We were deloused outside, had a bath and a shower. They were given uniform, side hats and leave pass, and that was it. That's coming home.
How did you feel to be back?
Again, it was an anticlimax. It sort of, whoopee. When you had a couple of pints back home, it probably sunk in a bit, but I tell you, Johnny Walker, I got into Nottingham, and imagine I went away in 1939.
What was the date you got back?
April the 13th, the day that Roosevelt died. If you chat up in the record, I think you'll find that. Eh?
And you were saying you got back to Nottingham.
Nottingham. And this was the old Victoria Station when that was in vogue. And opposite there was a YMCA. So, obviously, I mean, I wanted to get home and look smart as I could, and been knocked about and travelling. I always remember I came off the train and I was pulling my tie, get my tie off to get across the road and wash and brush up. And MPs pulled me up, arrested me. Improperly dressed. I thought, well, I've come all this way, about 2,000 miles, and improperly dressed. And
what did you say?
Well, when we forgot this £5 in Brussels, they said, we'll give you some papers to sort of exempt you from being put on too many duties or heavy duties, or because people were going berserk. I mean, imagine some blokes had a real bad time, and somebody said to him, "Oh, do this or do that," and they were going berserk, and probably brought a few rounds with them back home. Got a revolver tucked away and started shooting. Well, one or two people did get shot that way, and I said, "Oh, look at this thing, kid." You know, this is. Well, I don't know, this is genuine. I said, don't talk bloody that. I said, ring records and ask them. I said, if you want to be, I said, fairly obviously not running about, because imagine the early nibbers. One of them was about 18, one was 20. Well, they probably got a stripe and thought they was catching a burglar. But that still is a good stead, that, because I carry it with me all the time.
The document?
Yeah. He just pull it out and...
So what did your dad say when you saw him?
Not a lot. He had a few pints and he was quite happy. Said, my lad's coming home, and that's it.
So what
Everything seemed anticlimax. I mean, you've been longing and waiting for this moment to arrive. When it arrived in, he thought, well, it'll be sort of, I went in one pub at home, funny enough, I passed it today and it's boarded up, Queen's Head. And we used to go in there regular pre-war, and we were stationed at Rugby at the time, and said, well, we'll get a pass for the weekend. Came up Friday till Sunday. And we was going, and Jack used to say, you're two buggers home on a leave again. So, oh, we're going overseas next week. So I said, well, we'll have an extra pint. And the next week, it was called off, and 'cause we were waiting for it to, you know, to embark, but didn't know when. They kept saying, well, it'll be next week, it'll be tomorrow, it'll be next week. And we went in for about 4 weeks on the trot, and he said, I don't know. I said, I think you're about to pull my leg. He said, you get overseas. He said, we are. I said, it'll be next week, Jack, you can bet on that. And of course, it was the next week, and we didn't really see it for 5.5 years. And when we went in the same pub, he said, oh, you're two boys, I want to leave again. He said, like joking like, so he said, I tell you what, I said, while you've been away, I said, all the lads who've had leaves or been in England, I said, we've had a kitty and things like that. I said, so they had a bob or two, I said, so you better have one too. And he gave us a tenner apiece. The ten in those days was a lot of money, you know. They said, get a few parts in, and says, come in for about 3 or 4 weeks. And I said, well, we're going away. He said, well, when you come back, he said, pop in, and says, don't pay for a few weeks. Says, yeah, but I. And I passed it today, and they're thinking, poor sign of the time, you see.
So what? How long were you with at home? I mean, because you weren't demobilised straight away, were you?
Oh, no, I had about 5 months leave. They kept sending you a chitty saying, stay at home and here's your ration, like card, and that was it.
Now, some people had a lot of trouble when they came home from being a POW in settling down. You know, they had mental trouble, a bit edgy.
Oh, well, they're bound to have, aren't you?
Did you have any trouble, mental problems, nightmares?
I just have nightmares.
What about, do you remember now, or what sort of thing?
Well, this bombing, for instance, I mean, when we got caught at Knightsbridge, I used to have nightmares about that, because it was a kind of warfare that I'd never experienced. Well, I mean, a lot of lads had never seen that kind of thing before.
Knightsbridge?
Yeah, it was terrible.
And did they come on when you got home, or had you been having them while you were a POW as well?
Oh, no, when I came home.
So
when I first started work, I was... The nurse, I had to go see the nurse twice. It was like a breakdown, you know.
What other symptoms? So you had the nightmares. How did that affect you?
Well, it's hard.
And why did you have to go and see the nurse?
Well, you've got sort of a bit emotional. I mean, sort of crying and things like that. I mean, you can't contain. You don't know why you do it, but I mean, it is there all the time. And I'm fairly emotional. All kind of things like, you know, children and deaths and things like that. Even singing a song, a certain song, would sort of, you know.
Any other symptoms of what you'd been through mentally that came out when you got back home?
No, only that.
But you hadn't had it while you were still a prisoner, none of this?
Oh, no, no.
So it's that 3-year delay?
Yeah.
And then it came out when you were back free? Mm. Did they treat you in any way, or did they just... I mean, were you given any advice or medical treatment?
No.
Do you remember, I mean, after you'd been back about a month, it was VE Day, and then VJ Day a month after that, so 2 months after that. Do you remember them? What you did on VE Day?
May time.
8th of May.
Well, I'd be on leave then, wouldn't I? Mm. Oh, we'd got a party, we'd got a band. My pal could play the piano, and we got a jazz band on top of on an air raid shot. I always remember that. But everybody was in mood for parties. So you either went to the pub or went to see your mates or...
Was that an anticlimax, VE Day? Or was it as good as you thought it would be?
Well, I think for a lot of people, if you're a family man, you got sons away, and, I mean, it's more to them than it was to the bloke who was a soldier. Yeah.
And what about VJ Day? Was that the same or...?
Well, same. That was July, wasn't it?
August, I think.
August, oh, well. May, June, July, August. Of course, then I'd got a bob or two in my pocket, so I was jugging up and... Why women and song?
When did you have to go back then, after the 5 months? Where did you have to report to?
I went to place in just outside Newcastle.
And was that for, what was that for? Was that for demobilisation, or was that for retraining, or what?
Yeah, that was for rehabilitation.
And what happened?
Trying to find out what you'd lost, or whether your marbles were in the same place. Or.
And how did you, what did they do there? Do you remember now?
I always remember them playing the song, Don't Fence Me In. That was all the rage in those days. And the first thing I knew when I went into the bloody camp was this song was going all round. Don't Fence Me In. Have you heard it?
And what did they actually do there? I mean, how did they find out where you marbled, you know, how you were mentally?
Well, they said to you, well, what sort of job do you want to do? What were you before? Going to your history, like, and I said, I want to start driving, because I'd put my name down twice for a driving course. And
you'd been a bus conductor, hadn't you? You'd been various things, iron foundry, hosiery factory, bus conductor, I think.
That's right, yeah.
And you were a bus conductor when the war started, I think.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So, is that what you wanted to do, driving?
Yeah. Because when I went back to the bus company, I was still on a conditional driver's course.
So, sorry, I've got... So, this camp near Newcastle, did they put you through a driver's course there?
Yeah, so I passed my test there. But I didn't get in a sort of... I passed my test there and got me a sort of licence, but I didn't get on the course. I finished up, because I'm pretty good on writing, and they put me in the CO's office.
In what office?
CO's office, as his orderly. I had to wear slippers, I all remember that.
Why?
Because he didn't want to make a noise with the army shoes. Must wear slippers. So see his side mate, say, where are you going, Parker? I'm going to the office. In bloody carpet slippers, more or less, you know.
How long were you at the camp?
Not long, 3 or 4 weeks.
And then what happened? What next?
Well, I got my wish then, because I was sent down to a place just outside Hereford. That was ROC type of camp, you know.
Royal Army Ordnance Corps.
Yeah. Mm. And there was, I was a Lance Bombardier then, and it says, well, we'll put you in charge of 6 men, and we'll give you 6 wagons. And we were loading tank engines out of Nissan House, you know, the old Nissan House at the top. Imagine non-learners, drivers, and drivers that could drive, and drivers that couldn't drive. And we used to put more bloody, what's that, through it. It's a funny thing, but can you drive a car, Pete? Yeah. If you'd been down there, the drivers never seen a bloody car before in their life. And I don't know what they call these wagons, like a name or what. But you just have to get the engines off the railway station and take them up and stack them in these dizziness. And you have like a jib, and you wheel itself. You're sitting on the platform, and the driving wheel wasn't sort of like that. It got a knob on it, and you had to, and that was for your jib to lower and higher and lower. After about a fortnight, I'd managed to go through and listen over there, taking the top off. And it was ideal down there, because I was my own boss, and I got these 8 blokes or 6 blokes to look after, and they were the same. And used to have racers coming back from when it was food time, from the railway station to the camp. Used to have race. And these are queer things, you believe. You used to tip them over and...
So how long were you there for, near Hereford?
August, think, what? We're talking about August, aren't we? August. I think about 4 weeks.
Were you looking forward to being demobilised at the time?
No, not. Well, say yes or no. Wanted to get home and finish with the army, but then, while we're having a good time, we're quite happy. I mean, at least I was. I don't mind the adjutant. And we're in that country where, you know, Hereford's very close to Wells, isn't it? And that's it. Down that part of the country, there's a cider. Lots of cider made. And one day the telephone rang, and in the adjutant's office, somebody picked up and said, this is so-and-so, could you have 12 more men? Said, your blokes are doing a grand job down there. And the adjutant happened to be going through the room at the same time. And he said, who was that? And over on the phone said, well, it's the cider people, so they want 12 more men. He said, what, 12 more men? He said, what are you talking about? And apparently, unbeknown to him, instead of the lads going on parade and doing the proper job, they were down at the cider factory earning a bob or two. And he wanted 12 more men. It's like, it's crazy, but I mean, this went on all the time for about 3 months. Nobody found out till this bloke rang up and 12 more men. Because you could work part-time down there after hours, which allowed dues to, probably 3 hours, and get paid probably through the pocket. But they were doing it in bloody army's time, not the spirit there.
But you didn't do that?
No, no.
So what was your next posting? Or was that it?
Oh, no, no. I was posted to a camouflage school. And this again was...
When was that?
Had to be close on to that sort of year time, September time. And we were... I'd been to Aldershot to pick up 8 jeeps. So, again, with my team of men, I was a gaffer. Funnily enough, when... There was all kinds of people there. There was tank people, there was RHA, there was RA, there was RAF. And the sergeant major say, what are you in, Bobby? I said, RHA. Oh, he says, right of the line. And we always prayed first on the right. And he used to look after us like, you know, so we were the kingpin. We were the key regiment, RHA. And we had a good billet there, because, I mean, he was very fond of RHA and... He was an RA man himself. And from the camouflage school, I was sent to Chilwell, because we were supposed to
the
have
home. Supper.
I was supposed to be a home posting. Well, Chilwell is near Nottingham, of course. And I got married from there.
You were in the army?
In October, without telling the colonel. And I got called over the calls for that. That was in October. 45, yeah.
What made you decide to get married then, or was before you got out of the army?
Well, like everything else, I met a girl at a party, and she was a friend of my pal's sort of wife, and went to this party, and I sort of fell in love at first sight. And he was going to get married, and he said, will you be best man to me? And he was married on the 26th of September. I was best man to him. And on the 10th of October, I got married and he's best man to me.